Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Psalms chapter 35. We'll call this Psalm, Great is the Lord. The heading of the psalm is simply of David. So this is another Davidic psalm, all of which from number 2 all the way here to number 35 have been Davidic, except number 33, which was probably a part of the Davidic psalm number 32. So we'll assume now that we're still in the middle of David's psalms that he has written. We start now in Psalms 35, 1 through 4. David says this, "Contend, O Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of buckler and shield and rise up for my help. Draw also the spear and the battle axe to meet those who pursue me. Say to my soul, I am your salvation. Let those be ashamed and dishonored who seek my life. Let those be turned back and humiliated who devise evil against me." Now, David in verse 1 mentions those who contend with David. The question, of course, arises, well, when did this happen? Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown suggest that the historical occasion was probably when David was being pursued by Saul, and we will assume that. Now, David is asking for help against his enemies, and of course, that's a constant theme throughout these Davidic psalms. He says in verse 2, "Take hold of buckler and shield." What is a buckler? Here's what the NIV Study Bible says. Buckler is, quote, often translated shield. This was a specific type of shield, one that was quite large and used to cover the whole body, often carried by a shield bearer. The other word translated shield in verse 2 was a smaller version of a shield, round and oblong and more mobile. This was David's figurative way of saying that God is our complete defense. He protects us in every way. So in other words, when you see the phrase buckler and shield or shield and buckler, buckler is the big shield and shield is the small round shield. And so David is fully protected in every way. So David says, "Take my buckler and shield, God, and rise up for my help." In other words, you protect me with, poetically speaking, of course, with my defensive military armor. In verse 3, he says, "Draw also the spear and the battle axe." Now, the shield and buckler were defensive weapons. The spear and the battle axe were offensive weapons. So David is first protected, and then God goes on the offense in verse 3 against those who are pursuing David. And as God does that, he says to David's soul, or to David, "I am your salvation." And of course, that is temporal salvation here, not eternal. Verse 4, David says, "Let those be ashamed and dishonored who seek my life. Let those be turned back and humiliated who devise evil against me." Now, as John Gill points out, we need to be careful here. David is not speaking as a private person, because if he were speaking as a private person, he would be asking for revenge. Let him be humiliated. No, he's talking as a king, as someone who is responsible for the safety of his kingdom. Otherwise, you would be running afoul of Jesus' command to turn the other cheek in personal matters. But this is not a personal matter. This is somebody who's trying to kill the anointed king of Israel, assuming that he's already been anointed. But he's eventually going to be the king of Israel. If he's running from Saul, he has been anointed as king. Now, there is another way of looking at this. We could assume that David is not speaking in his capacity as a king, but he is speaking as a private person who is in need of self-defense. There's nothing wrong with self-defense. And so if David's saying, those who are trying to kill me in self-defense, I want them to be humiliated, which is basically an imprecation. So this is an imprecatory psalm. This is what Adam Clark says about this. Quote, "The imprecations in these verses against enemies are all legitimate. They are not against the souls or eternal welfare of those sinners, but against their schemes and plans for destroying the life of an innocent man. And the holiest Christian may offer up such prayers against his adversaries." Of course. "If a man aim a blow at another with a design to take away his life, and the blow would infallibly be mortal if it took place, and the person about to be slain see that by breaking the arm of his adversary he may prevent his own death and thus save his enemy from actual murder, it is his duty to prevent this double evil by breaking the arm of the bloodthirsty man." That's right. You not only save your life when somebody's trying to kill you, you stop somebody from becoming a murderer, the person who's trying to kill you. And there's nothing wrong with that. If David is speaking not as a private person but as a king, would we criticize, taking an analogous case, the American government in World War II is fighting against Adolf Hitler, and we say, oh, God, please turn back Adolf and humiliate Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini and all who devise evil against President Roosevelt. We wouldn't see anything wrong with that at all. Unless we're a pacifist, of course. But I believe pacifism is beyond the pale, is so indefensible. We go now to Psalm 35, verses 5 through 6. David continues, "Let them be," his enemies, "be like chaff before the wind, with the angel of the Lord driving them on. Let their way be dark and slippery, with the angel of the Lord pursuing them." David continues with his imprecations here, and we need to make a distinction between praying imprecatory prayers on evil people. We're just praying that they be defeated. That's not the same thing as praying that they go to hell. I don't think anybody should ever pray that. I don't think David ever prayed that. He was just praying for temporal deliverance. He wasn't saying that his enemies should be defeated eternally forever in hell. He's just saying they should be defeated as they are fighting David. And I think more Christians ought to pray imprecatory prayers against the fools that are destroying Western culture, the Antichrist, woke, progressive, secular humanist left. I pray imprecatory prayers against them all the time, but I never pray that they go to hell. I think that is utterly illegitimate. I pray that they get saved, actually. I know there's a section of them that are going to get saved. I'm sure the elect is amongst all these evil people, and that there are some of those who are going to see the light and repent of their sins. So I would never wish that they would go to hell. But David says in verse 5, "Let them be like chaff before the wind." You know, you throw up the chaff. The husk around wheat is very light, and the wind blows it away very carefully, blows it away very quickly, with the angel of the Lord driving them on. Driving on the enemies of God, who's the angel of the Lord? I always say is Jesus. It's just easier. Could have been, as Galen Clark suggests, it could be just a regular old good angel, or it could be a bad angel, a demon. A demon is driving on the enemies of the devil. Gillen Clark suggests that. I don't think so. The NIV Study Bible suggests it could be God himself, the angel of the Lord. Why not just Jesus? The NIV Study Bible suggests Jesus too. The NIV Study Bible also has another suggestion that the angel of the Lord driving the enemies of David on is an unidentified messenger of the Lord, because angel, of course, can mean messenger. What does that mean? No, let's just say it's Jesus driving David's enemies away. Verse 6. David says, "Let their way be dark and slippery." Now, Adam Clark's got a good quotation concerning the way of the enemies of David as they flee. He says this, quote, "Let them," let the enemies of David, "let them lose their way, be entangled in morasses and thickets, and be confounded in all their attempts to injure me." All these phrases are military and relate to ambushes, hidden snares, forced marches in order to surprise, and stratagems of different kinds. In other words, let them be totally confused as they run. Let them slip on the rocks, slip in the mud as they run, as Jesus chases them, or the angel of the Lord chases them. We go now to Psalm 35, verses 7 through 10. David continues, "For without cause they hid their net from me," the they being his enemies. "Without cause they dug a pit for my soul. Let destruction come upon him unawares, and let the net which he hid catch himself into that very destruction. Let him fall. And my soul shall rejoice in the Lord. It shall exult in his salvation. All my bones will say, Lord, who is like you? Who delivers the afflicted from him who is too strong for him, and the afflicted and the needy from him who robs him?" Now in verse 7, David says, "For without cause they hid their net from me." Without cause, David's innocent. His cause is righteous. "For without cause they hid their net from me, and they dug a pit." Hunters would dig pits and put nets in the pits in order to catch animals, and so David was being hunted down just like an animal. Verse 8, "Let destruction come upon him unawares," David says. "Let the net which he hid catch himself." So David, instead of falling into the net, his enemies fall into the net that the enemy had laid to catch David with. In other words, to use the English metaphor, David's enemy would be hoisted on his own petard. And of course, that phrase comes from what happened with Haman. In the story of Esther, he built a gallows, a petard, in order to hang Mordecai on those gallows. And instead, Xerxes, the king, said, "No, Haman, we're going to hang you on your own petard, on your own gallows." Verse 9, David says, "And my soul shall rejoice in the Lord. It shall exult in his salvation." One might ask, is this Schadenfreude, that new German word that new German word, which I encountered upon coming back from China. I never heard it while I was in China, but it got to be popular here in America. Schadenfreude is gloating over the fall of one's enemies, saying, ha, 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 you're suffering defeat. Ho, ho, ho. Well, John Gill says that, look, David is not rejoicing in the destruction of his enemies. Well, I don't know about that. I think that's a surprising statement to make. Yes, he is rejoicing in the destruction of his enemies, because if he's rejoicing in God's salvation of David, that is the same thing as saying, ho, 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 God wins, you lose. So I don't see the distinction that it's okay to rejoice in God, but not okay to rejoice in the destruction of your enemies. That's too fine a distinction for me, because in order for David to be saved, his enemies had to be destroyed. And so what if it's Schadenfreude? We can't rejoice over the fall of Adolf Hitler? Hot dog, Adolf Hitler got burned up in his bunker in Berlin in 1945. If I were still living then and I knew about it, I'd jump up and down for joy. Nothing wrong with Schadenfreude if your enemies are evil monsters who are trying to destroy decent and innocent human life. Verse 10, David says, all my bones will say, Lord, who is like you? All my bones, that's of course a literal translation from the New American Standard. The NIV translates it as my whole being. All my bones, I like that. All my bones, all my being will say, Lord, who is like you? Who delivers the afflicted or the poor? KJV and NIV translate that as poor. Who delivers the afflicted or the poor from him who is too strong for him? In other words, who delivers the afflicted person from an enemy who is too strong for the afflicted person? And who delivers the afflicted and the needy from the person who robs the afflicted and the needy? Well, we know the answer to that. Well, we know it's the Lord. And the question is who is like the Lord that can do that? And that's a rhetorical question, the expected answer to which is, there is nobody like Yahweh who can do that. We go now to Psalms 35, verses 11 through 14. David continues, malicious witnesses come forward. They question me about things I do not know. They repay me evil for good, making me desolate. Yet when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. When they were sick, I humbled myself with fasting, and my prayer was genuine. I went about grieving as if for my friend or brother. I was bowed down with grief, like one mourning a mother. Now, who these malicious witnesses in verse 11 that David was speaking of, it's unknown who they were or when this happened, as the NIV Study Bible says, but it could have been Saul's advocates who lied and said that David wanted to attack Saul when David was in Saul's court. We read in 1 Samuel 24:9, David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men, saying, behold, David seeks to harm you? So David was aware of people who were slandering David to Saul. Malicious witnesses, false witnesses. These witnesses questioned David about things he did not know, as verse 11 says. In other words, as Gill points out, the charges were so outlandish that David did not even know what his accusers were talking about. He can't defend himself because he has no idea what the slander is referring to. Verse 12, these malicious witnesses repaid David evil for good. Now these are some examples of what David has done for Saul, good things, and as a result, David got evil turned back on him as Saul tries to kill him. David had killed Goliath for Saul. David had killed 10,000 Philistines for Saul. David twice refused to kill Saul when he had the opportunity. In the cave near En-Gedi, for example, and the other cave in the wilderness down there south of Hebron, southeast of Hebron, twice he could have killed Saul, but he didn't do it. That was good. But instead, David got repaid evil. Saul's people were trying to kill him, making him desolate. Proverbs 17:13 says, he who returns evil for good, evil will not depart from his house. Did evil ever depart from Saul's house? No. He ended up getting killed in battle. His son was killed with him. His kingdom eventually torn away from his house. Verse 13, David says, yet when they were sick, these malicious witnesses against David, yet when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. In other words, he fasted for them. I humbled myself with fasting, and my prayer was genuine. David apparently had shown kindness to Saul's courtiers who were trying to kill David at the behest of Saul. The Holman Christian Study Bible says at the end of verse 13 that David's prayer was genuine. Now, literally, the Hebrew is, as the NASB translates it, the Hebrew is kept returning to my bosom. My prayer kept returning to my bosom. What does that mean? Well, John Gill says it either means the prayer returned answered to David's bosom, the prayer for his malicious witnesses when he was fasting for them, Or it could mean David's prayer for the malicious witnesses returned to David unanswered. Well, the NIV translates it this way, when my prayers return to me unanswered. That's the way the NIV takes it. The NIV, God's word, says, my prayer returned unanswered. So that's the way we're going to take it. David's saying, I prayed, but my prayer returned unanswered. Now, the question might arise, why did his prayer return unanswered? It's a little awkward there. Of course, there are such things as unanswered prayer, but why would David say that right here? I fasted for them, I wore sackcloth for them, and my prayer wasn't answered. I went about grieving for them as if they were my friends and my brothers. I was bowed down with grief, but my prayer wasn't answered. I don't really think that fits too well. So the Holman Christian Study Bible, I think, takes some liberties with the literal text and says my prayer was genuine. That does make sense. Fits the context. Fits everything. So that's the way we're going to take it. Now, the New American Bible's got an interesting translation. It says that I sobbed my prayers upon my bosom. Sobbed my prayers upon my bosom? I guess what that means is you prayed so hard that you started crying and your tears went on your chest. I don't know. That seems a little forced to me. So we're going to take the Holman Christian Study Bible translation here. My prayer was genuine. Verse 14, David says, I went about grieving as if for my friend or brother. The grieving is not in the original text, but that's what it means, obviously. I was bowed down with grief like one mourning a mother. And so how does David get repaid for this? Saul's people are trying to kill him. We go now to Psalms 35, verses 15 through 18. David continues, but when I stumbled, they gathered in glee. The they is the malicious witnesses. They gathered in glee. They gathered against me. Assailants I did not know tore at me and did not stop. With godless mockery, they gnashed their teeth at me. Lord, how long will you look on? Rescue my life from their ravages, my only one from the young lions. That means his only life from the young lions. I will praise you in the great congregation. I will exalt you among many people. In verse 15, David says, when I stumbled, one of my commentators says that that could refer to the time that David was mocked by Shimei, when Shimei was throwing sand on David and mocking him. When David was fleeing from Absalom's rebellion and climbing up the Mount of Olives on his way out of Jerusalem as he was kicked out of town. They gathered in glee. They gathered against me. That could refer to Shimei and friends mocking David. But of course, we've already said this is probably referring to when David was running from Saul, so it would be strange to shift context like that all of a sudden. It doesn't really matter. At some point, David stumbled. His enemies gathered around to take him down. Assailants I did not know tore at me, David said. Assailants, the NIV has attackers. Clark says they're probably hired assassins, although I don't know how Clark knows that. But whoever they were, they didn't know David. Now, here's a problem here. Why would David not know who was attacking him? Well, maybe that's why Clark says they hired assassins. They must have worn a black hood, so David didn't know who they were. But I don't think that's the right solution. Let's look at some other optional answers. The NIV translation has attackers gathered against me when I was unaware. In other words, not attackers that I didn't know who they were, but attackers who gathered against me when I was unaware. He didn't see them coming. John Gill says that it could mean that David did not know the attackers were gathering against him, which is the same idea. He didn't see them coming. Here's another suggestion from Gill and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. David was not conscious of any evil that he had done to the attackers. Assailants, I did not know. The reason I didn't know who was coming after me, because I hadn't done anything to make anybody my enemy. Well, whatever it is, assailants came after David, and they did not stop. With godless mockery, in verse 16, they gnashed their teeth at me. Lord, how long will you look on? And of course, David's attitude there is very natural. We get ourselves in trouble and we wonder why God does not answer the prayer quickly, more quickly. Why does he take so long to answer? Well, the simple answer to that is to build your faith and endurance. David continues, rescue my life from their ravages, my only one from the young lions. Now, my only one is kind of interesting. The New American Bible and God's Word translations say, rescue my precious life from the young lions. That makes sense. The NASB has, rescue my only life from the young lions. That makes sense. The Bible in basic English leaves out the only because I guess it's understood that you only have one life. And so that translation says, rescue my life from the young lions. No problem. But if you look at the King James, and I just love this translation, rescue my darling from the young lions. Sounds like David's got a girlfriend or a wife or something that's about to get eaten up by a lion. Rescue my darling. Well, that's King James English for soul, for life. Rescue my darling. It just amazes me that anybody would insist on using the KJV today in modern English, because nobody can half understand what it says. We got people out there saying not only is it the preferred version, but it's the only version, which to me is almost beyond human belief that somebody could believe that. I was in China and came across a fundamentalist missionary who was teaching Chinese people to learn English so that he could witness to them with the King James Bible, because that was the only Bible translation there was. And he was in China, and it's an English translation that's 350 years old. What did Jesus say about being wise as serpents? Well, we need some wisdom about things like that, because that's absolutely stupid. Why would we use a translation that doesn't communicate meaning? Oh, it's beautiful language. Well, fine. If you want to write poetry, use the King James. But if you want to understand what the Word of God is and you want to let other people understand, use a translation that people can understand. David says in verse 18, I will praise you in the great congregation. What is the great congregation? The NIV has the great assembly. I will praise you in the great assembly. The NIV Study Bible makes a comment there, quote, the congregation gathered to worship God. Some suggest this anticipates a future gathering of all those around the world who serve the Lord. So is the great assembly of all saints all over the world? I don't think so. I think it's just the magnificent assembly of the Jews when they get together to worship God in the tabernacle. Psalms 22:22, I will tell of your name to my brethren. In the midst of the assembly, I will praise you. And of course, this is a Davidic psalm, and he's saying in the midst of the assembly, when the Jews get together to praise God at the tabernacle. Now, one last comment before I leave verses 15 through 18. Verse 16, I skipped this by accident. With godless mockery, these false witnesses gnash their teeth at David. Godless mockery, that's a pretty good translation. The NASB has, like godless jesters. These jesters that are hired to clown around at feast. How many times, if you read medieval history, does a king just love a jester, and all of a sudden the jester goes a little bit over the line and he gets canceled by the king, thrown in jail because maybe he said something about the king's mistress was a little fat or something like that, or a mistress who was the wife of an important official or something just really politically impolitic, and they get thrown in the clink. And they were always saying crazy things. And a lot of kings really liked these jesters. But the jesters were known for stating foolish things. So they're saying stupid things. They're mocking God. Godless mockery means they're saying things that are stupid. And these stupid things are godless, having nothing to do with praising God. We go now to Psalms 35, verses 19 through 21. Do not let those who are wrongfully my enemies rejoice over me. David is praying to God. Nor let those who hate me without cause wink maliciously, for they do not speak peace, but they devise deceitful words against those who are quiet in the land or peaceful in the land. They opened their mouth wide against me. They said, aha, aha, our eyes have seen it. So David in verse 19 says there are people that are wrongfully David's enemies. That would probably be Saul and his courtiers, as Clark speculates. I think that's probably true. Nor let those who hate me without cause. David is professing his righteousness here. That's not a problem of self-righteousness. He's not claiming to be sinlessly perfect. He just claims to be innocent of that which his enemies were charging him with. Here's some other related scriptures, related psalms. These are Davidic psalms, Psalm 69:4. Those who hate me without a cause are more than the hairs of my head. Those who would destroy me are powerful, being wrongfully my enemies. And another Davidic psalm, Psalm 109, verse 3. They also have surrounded me with words of hatred and fought against me without cause. So David is claiming to have enemies that are enemies for no reason. They have no reason to be his enemies. He has done nothing to wrong them. That doesn't mean he's self-righteous. It just means he's right. So these enemies hate David without cause and they wink maliciously. John Gill says this winking is expressing pleasure one to another at David's distresses. So Proverbs 6:13 says, who winks with his eyes, who signals with his feet, who points with his fingers. I'm not exactly sure what the custom was back then, but I guess what they're doing is they're scorning and deriding David, looking at each other, looking at each other, and then they wink their eyes at each other and says, aha, that's the way it is. But here's another way to translate that verse. This is NASB that has wink maliciously. His enemies are doing that. But that same verse in the Holman Christian Study Bible says this, do not let my deceitful enemies rejoice over me. Do not let those who hate me without cause look at me maliciously instead of wink at me, look at me. And that way we get past whatever cultural differences there are between back then and now. Verse 20, for they do not speak peace, but they devise deceitful words against those who are quiet in the land. And that means peaceful in the land. How do they open their mouths wide? They open their mouths in laughter, scorn, and derision. For example, in Psalms 22:7, David says this, all who see me sneer at me. They separate with the lip. They wag the head. Separate with the lip is like a dog that bares his teeth. He separates his lips so you can see his teeth. Well, think if people are doing that. They're sneering at you when they do that. And they wag their head. They wag their head. They're shaking their head and say, what a pitiful piece of junk you are. We do the same things. So those actions are not hard to interpret. Now, it's interesting that the gospel writers use this language here to describe what people did to the crucified Jesus. In fact, in Psalm 22:7, what I just quoted, that Davidic psalm, all those who see sneer at me, David says, they separate the lip, they wag the head. That is the situation of the type. David, the antitype, had the same thing happen to him, because when Jesus was on the cross, everyone who saw him sneered at him. They separated with the lip, they wagged the head. And this is described by the gospel writers in Matthew 27:39, and those passing by were hurling abuse at Jesus, wagging their heads. Hurling abuse, that means sneering at him and wagging their heads. Mark 15:29, those passing by were hurling abuse, sneering at him, wagging their heads. Luke 23:35, and the people stood by looking on, and even the rulers were sneering at him. So Psalm 22 is universally considered a prophetic psalm, and the language is very similar. And the language is very similar to what actually happened as the gospel writers describe it, and it's also very similar, the language is, to this particular psalm. Psalm 35, verse 21, they opened their mouth wide against me. They said, aha, aha. What is aha? Adam Clark says it's a protracted, strongly guttural sound, marking insult and triumph at the same time. They said, aha, aha, our eyes have seen it. Seen what? Seen that for which they wished, namely the distress of David. We see it, we see it. Aha, aha, you're going down, David. We go now to verses 22 through 25. David continues, you saw it, Lord, do not be silent. In other words, you saw the insults and derision of my opponents, so don't be silent about that. Since you've seen it, I don't need to give evidence anymore. Defeat them. That's what it means. You saw it, God. You don't need to see anymore. Lord, do not be silent. In other words, answer my prayer. Lord, do not be far from me. Wake up and rise to my defense, to my cause, my God and my Lord. Vindicate me, Lord my God, in keeping with your righteousness, and do not let them rejoice over me. Do not let them say in their hearts, aha, just what we wanted. Do not let them say, we have swallowed him up. So David asked the Lord in verse 22, do not be silent. In other words, answer my prayer. Psalms 28:1, David says this, to you, O Lord, I call, my rock, do not be deaf to me, for if you are silent to me, I will become like those who go down to the pit. Don't be silent. Answer my prayer. Of course, David is just like everybody else, every other saint. We want God to answer our prayers now, and sometimes God doesn't answer them now, and so we say, where are you, God? Don't be silent. Wake up and rise to my defense, David says in verse 23. Wake up and rise to my cause. You know, David said that in the very first verse of this psalm, Psalm 35. David said, contend, O Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. And here he says, rise to my defense, my cause. Similar idea. Fight for me. And then in verse 24, David says, vindicate me, Lord my God. Vindicate means to show that I'm right. And of course, David was assuming he was right. He says, vindicate me, Lord my God, in keeping with your righteousness. In other words, God is righteous. I'm righteous. So my righteousness is in keeping with your righteousness. I'm right about what my enemies are falsely accusing me of, things that I don't even know what they're talking about. David is saying it wouldn't be righteous if a righteous God let David's nasty, evil enemies triumph over David, the righteous one. There would be no justice in that. David says in verse 25, do not let them say in their hearts, aha, just what we wanted. Of course, what was it they wanted? They wanted David to be destroyed. That's what David's enemies wanted. And David says, do not let them say we have swallowed him up. We go now to Psalms 35, verses 26 through 28, and we will finish this audio. David continues, praying to God, let those be ashamed and humiliated altogether who rejoice at my distress. Let those be clothed with shame and dishonor who magnify themselves over me. Some imprecations from David. I'm not going to talk about that anymore. It's perfectly just. Let them shout for joy and rejoice who favor my vindication, and let them say continually, the Lord be magnified who delights in the prosperity of his servant, and my tongue shall declare your righteousness and your praise all day long. In verse 26, let those be ashamed and humiliated who rejoice at David's distress. Well, that would be Saul and Saul's minions. Well, Saul and his courtiers were all destroyed in the last battle with the Philistines in the Jezreel Valley up there when David and Jonathan got their bodies, their corpses nailed up on the walls of Bethshan. So if indeed these are the enemies that David is talking about here, they were ashamed and humiliated big time. But in contrast to the shame of David's enemies, in verse 27, David says, let those who favor David's vindication shout for joy and rejoice. Let those who want to see David proved to be righteous, vindicated, let them shout for joy. Let them say continually, let the Lord be magnified. Because you see, David thinks that when his cause is vindicated, that magnifies the Lord, because he was so confident in his life and course of action being in accord with the Lord's righteousness that he could say, hey, when I win, God's magnified. After all, he's the king of Israel. The Lord be magnified who delights in the prosperity of his servant David. And of course, God delighted in David's prosperity. And prosperity here does not mean financial wealth necessarily. It means success in general. And in verse 28, David finishes up with his usual high note at the end of his psalms, and my tongue shall declare your righteousness and your praise all day long. And of course, the righteousness that David would be talking about here is the vindication of David's cause against his unjust enemies. Ladies and gentlemen, on that happy, happy note, we are now ready to go to Psalm 36, our next audio, which we will entitle, How Precious is Your Steadfast Love. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.